Let's get ourselves back underway. You should have your Bibles open to Romans chapter 13 and verse 11. Once again, we're dealing with the godly thinking in connection with making judgments, in connection with time, and as it links itself to our judgments in connection with all men in general. And because we're going to make judgments about all men in general, it stands to reason that's going to mean that we're going to have to make some wise judgments about the kind of time and the avenues that we take to deal with our neighbor and with others around us. So we've been talking about the first thing we're confronted with in this particular section dealing with godly judgment is judgments in use of our personal time. And it's natural that that's where you start, because from that we'll be able to talk about dispensational time and timing. The timing of the genius of God in bringing in this dispensation of grace when he did, that he didn't do it, you know, at the end of the third installment of the fifth component of Israel's courses of punishment, but that he brought it in at a particular time for a particular reason, and he's going to end it at a particular time for a particular reason, and we need to focus our attention on that. But it comes out of knowing the time and awaking out of this kind of sleep. So as we ended last time talking about personal time as now having been for a son, and it isn't this way for every Christian, because not every believer, their spiritual life really doesn't matter to them. So they are just kind of marking time until they die. And certainly the lost have their own system of and way in which they judge time and make judgments in connection with it. But specifically for a saint who has taken his spiritual life seriously, has responded to his adoption as a son and as a daughter, he's now been placed into an environment of education and an environment of training. And we talked about that in the military sense, but even in the educational system we have, there's a parallel to that. We have people even in our church who are involved in some deep educational aspects of their own personal life, that it's an environment. You don't, when you were in university and college, you don't live the same way. That's not really real life, because it has certain constraints on your time. You can't get just any job you want, because you also have to have time for study. And so it makes it so that you realize that you're in a very unique environment. And that makes it so that your personal time and all of the various priorities of your life that are going to naturally, a priority of life is going to expend time. And that all matters. By the time you reach Romans 13, 11, that matters deeply to you at this point by now. And at least it should, if everything's been working well and working the way it should with the godly wisdom and the justice and the godly love and charity and so forth. Therefore, because of this, what I call this environment, that your times, your lifetime, or the times of your life is in as a son undergoing the godly edification and education, and all that that entails, demands, and what it calls for, naturally enough, and as sure as you were made aware of in advance, you therefore know some things about time, knowing the time. That you know there are going to be times, and there's going to come a time when everything gets kicked up a notch, so to speak, in connection with getting and acquiring greater skills. You're going to get skill acquisition and greater ability and greater capacity. That's what all this is doing. Being conformed to the image of Christ isn't being conformed into a statue. It's being conformed into someone who is like him in the way you think and live and labor. And it's being a part of this magnificent new creature of this church, the body of Christ. And being conformed to his image means that you have skills and capacities and abilities. And in connection with your Father giving you greater responsibility now, as that capacity gets kicked up, As you continue on through God's word and the living words, living God, begin living in you, and they're getting written upon the tables of the fleshy tables of your heart, and the book of your soul is beginning to get filled, you're far more usable. And that means more responsibility and greater opportunity for you to be engaged in and involved in your Father's business operations. And that means that greater amounts of your personal time are going to be naturally given over to that education and that training and that involvement in your Father's business. And the pressures and the demands and the priorities and the opportunities that you and I have as a son, they really are unique. There's no one else on this earth with those kinds of demands. Sons have them. Other, even believers, have really, for all intents and purposes, if they're not following our epistles in the way God put them in our Bible, from Romans through Philemon entirely, and especially Romans through 2 Thessalonians, if it's just a hunt-and-pick system, and really church is just therapy to get by another week until you get another dose of therapy, the truth of the matter is that kind of a believer, even though they may be totally saved, justified, and going to heaven when they die, they are not in this unique environment. Because they don't really know what they're doing here. Let's be honest, they just don't know what they're doing. They think that, well, we're here to get the church bigger. And they fall into that trap that the Apostle Paul calls later on, thinking that gain is godliness. That a church is successful in God's sight if it has people and if it has money. And if it has numbers and if it has money, then it's successful and God is blessed. I can't tell you how many thousands of times I hear believers say, God's blessing us. God's really blessed this church. And what they mean is, look at all the people we have. And look at all the buildings we have. And look at all the money we have. That isn't an indicator of anything except good business practice. That's why I said today, I'm not going to mention the church, but next Sunday, there's one of the biggest churches right around where I live, and they're having Dan the Animal Man. How can a church compete with Dan the Animal Man? I mean, it just all I offer here is just the Word of God. They've got Dan the Animal Man, and you know they're gonna it's standing room only. I'm sure he may wrestle a crocodile, and of course that'll. There's probably a way to tie that into the resurrection. I'm not sure how, but that's probably what's going to be going on there. Dan the Animal Man. That's why I say a son understands the environment he's in. And he understands the unique pressures of it and the priorities of it and the kind of opportunities available to him in his life. They're unique to his life and lifestyle. Your father doesn't invite just anybody into his business. He invites those who have responded positively and properly to all that he has made them to be in Christ. And it makes sense. You know, even if I had my own son, I had my own business, I'm not just going to let him run a machine because he's my son when he has no idea what he's doing. He'll ruin my business. I just love him and keep him out of the business, but the truth of the matter is a son has an ongoing lifetime godly edification, godly education, and vocational training. And this isn't anything really uncommon to some things that kind of parallel this issue in the realm of natural education, as I say, and vocational training. For instance, as an example, it's not at all uncommon to enter into some given field of study. I mean, we have a doctorate degree over here. We've got people who have degrees in subject matters. This church is full of people who take subjects that I could not even approach. And that's why I was saying the other day, it's good that the pastor is probably the dumbest guy in the assembly, because if he gets it, then you can't help but get it. But you've got all kinds of fields of study. You take any kind of study for a particular career, to find that there's times, even my daughter has found this in her field of study, where a teacher, an instructor, a professor will stand up in front of the class and say something like to the students, "Now, if you expect to pass this class and hold down two or three jobs, you're kidding yourself. That ain't going to work." Some of them are so strict, they'll say, you won't have a prayer of passing this course and working at the same time. Now, before you give another thought, let me tell you, I'm not saying that you're to stop working. This is just an illustration. In fact, none of this that we're going to teach is going to tell you to give up your job. So rest assured, we're not doing that. But what we are doing is, I'm using this as an illustration, that it's not uncommon to be in an environment where a professor or a teacher comes along and says, "You don't have a prayer of being able to be educated properly if you give your time to something else." Or they'll come along and say, "If you think you've been, you know, you got some little doll on the string out there, you got some guy, you know, that you're seeing, well, dating is over for you, at least for this semester. Because you're not going to be able to go out and do all these things and go to the bars and go to this place and go to that place and spend time with little sweetie there, because you're in a hold." When I went to Vandercook, one of the professors there, one of his favorite phrases is, he'd say, "You're not in high school anymore, boy." And boy, that was right. You're in a new environment. My band director at Vandercook College of Music said the only reason you will ever miss being in this band every single day is if you die. I will only accept you. I can hear him saying this. His name was Vic Zajac, and he was just as tough as his name sounded. And he said, "The only thing I'll accept is your death certificate, and you have to deliver it in person." I got the flu up there. I was so sick. I had 104 fever. And I was so sick. And here it came, 10:30. I got to get in band. And I went and I took my horn, my sax, and I didn't even put my reed on it. I went and I sat in my chair and I stuck my sax in my mouth and I just kind of was like that. And I just sat there for an hour. I never played a note. I never did anything. Hour was up. Vic saw me. He knew, anybody who saw me, I looked like death warmed over. And I just sat there with my horn hanging in my mouth for an hour. Band was over. I had enough strength to put my horn in my case, and I walked back to my dorm room and fell into bed. But I went to band. I knew I couldn't miss it. I was in that kind of a musical environment where that was demanded. Again, I'm using this as an illustration to say that for me to stand up here, for God to be able to come along and confront you with the issue of time, you shouldn't sit there and be put out by it or be put off by it, because there's many parallels, and some of you have gone through some of these things where you've had that kind of issue with time occur in the environment that you were in. And this is, you have particular jobs like that. You can't, certain classes or career training where you couldn't be taking a lot of vacations. In fact, some teachers will tell students that even if they miss one class, it'll put them in jeopardy of being able to pass the course. Well, the truth is, and by the way, I'm being very careful in this, because pastors and Bible teachers and preachers always have kind of pet sermons when attendance starts lagging to try to get people jazzed up and get them back in church. Believe me, you know me well enough that one, and I've tried it here, and it never works. None of that stuff works, because all that is rah, 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 therapy motivation without any change that takes place in the inner man, and it just is temporary at best. So that's not what I'm doing. This is something that is of a permanent nature. This is something that, this is not an isolated Bible class. What you're hearing now is in the middle of a long course of instruction. that should not be not only not off-putting, but it should be the most appealing thing that you should be almost straining to move into this realm, to have more of your time given over to your Father's business, to let it encroach more and more upon the details of your life, because you're becoming more like Father, like Son. And so the truth of the matter is, oftentimes a young person who goes off to college or university, the truth of the matter is, you look at most of the kids that go to college, that go to university, and I think Andrew said it well too, if you go into the military, the prioritizing of their personal time is one of the biggest shocks they ever get. It is, you take a young person who's been with mommy and daddy their entire life, take them up and dump them off at college, then a shock sets in at some point that they have to manage their own time. And if you're honest with yourself, one of the greatest areas in which failure takes place on a college level can usually be traced back to the failure to be able to utilize their time wisely. They skipped class, they didn't go to class, they went partying, they did all of these things, they are one semester flare-out dropout. And you could trace almost all that back, I would say the majority of the time, you'll trace it back to a failure to make the wisest use of their time. Well, so it is with you as a son of God in the education and the vocational training you're currently undergoing. These are all things that you are to already know about time. In that little phrase of verse 11, and that knowing the time. You know the unique environment of the time that you're in. You know you already know, because you've been told about some things in advance, that given the high priority of your sonship education and the vocational training that it offers you, you know there's coming a point at which you're going to have to make some adjustments priority-wise to the amount of personal time you're giving going to have to give in order to get everything out of this your Father's designed for you to get out of it. And I'm intentionally focusing a lot of time. I'm intentionally focusing a lot of, a lot of attention upon this little phrase, knowing the time, because it really does have to, you have to step back and let that make a deep impact upon you. It's easy to just skim over this. And that knowing the time, because you see that, your eye catches that phrase, doesn't it? It's high time to wake out of sleep. Man, if your father comes along and says, hey, wake up, it's high time to get up, get out of bed, get out of sleep, that captures your attention. But that, it's easy to skip over. And that knowing the time, because that's what precipitates the father to be able to now say, it's time to get out of sleep, for now is our salvation nearer than when we believe. Notice he does not say, that's, by the way, worded very carefully. He doesn't say at the end of that, for now is our rapture nearer than when we believed. He says, now is our salvation nearer than when we believed. There's a reason for that. We'll get to all that in time. But I'm it's easy to skim over this phrase and go on to the next one. But this is essential to have this little step make you think hard about, or maybe step back, as it were, and look at the overall life you have now, because you've lived enough of it. You've been advanced far enough into the education that the environment is there. Like in the Marines, they take a young man, he's a civilian. By the time he gets done with boot camp, he's no longer a civilian, he's a Marine. Once a Marine, always a Marine. Well, you take a lost person, justify them and sanctify them and take them through the sonship education. As they start going through it, they realize this is who I am now. It's like I said before, this isn't, this has, God's design in sonship education is to take what's on the page of this book, lift it off the page, and have it live in you, so that it's what Paul says to the Corinthians, you become a living epistle. Romans through Philemon is to become you. That you're to become those epistles and live those things to the point. And I know you know what I'm going to say. You know I don't mean this literally, but to the point that you don't need the book, because that's what you are. I don't find anywhere, rarely except when Jesus was in a synagogue, did he have the book. They didn't bring the woman who was caught in adultery, throw her down at his feet, and say, what are you going to do with her? The law says she should be stoned. And Jesus said, time out. And then he goes and he said, just wait a minute, I'll be right back with you. He unscrolls his Bible and he starts looking, Well, as a matter of fact, there wasn't a single verse from Genesis 1:1 to the last verse of Malachi, which is what he had at that time. He had all those books. There isn't a single verse in all that information that says what to do with that girl. But the law said she should be stoned. Jesus didn't say, time out, I got to go and read. He was those words. He had that small case S spirit of his Father that comes from the living words of the living God living in you, and made one of the wisest judgments that would have even made Solomon look bad by comparison. When he said, he who is without sin among you, let him cast the first stone. I always read stuff like that and think, I wish I'd have thought of that. That would have taken me months to come up with that. I can remember reading my Bible, reading through the Gospels, and I was impressed with all miracles and stuff, but what really impressed me was that. He'd get put into a verbal corner by these Pharisees and by the lawyers and the Sadducees, and he always had the right thing to say, the wisest thing to say, something that altered lives. Her life was changed because of what came out of his mouth. And that was judgment. He rendered a judgment based upon what was operating in his inner man. That's what's offered to you. To have your Father's heart developed in you to that extent. And that means that it should be something that you can think about and step back and recognize a measure of that has begun taking place in you. And realize the way in which, by just what you've learned and been engaged with so far in the six components of the wisdom, the three, like I put up there before, where we've come, the education so far, and that's just an eye-catching sample of it, but just in the six components of wisdom, the three components of justice, the first component of judgment, how all of that has made its way, it's found its way into your personal time, your personal life, and the details of your life. Man, there's things that matter now. Look, when we went through like that last issue of justice in the first seven verses of Romans 13, that was a big one for me because that I thought I was a patriot. You know, I bled red, white, and blue and all this kind of thing. But I didn't understand patriotism the way my father understood it. I didn't understand the power and what government was to him, and how he fractured it, and how that it doesn't matter the kind or the quality of government that we have, that a son looks right through the people who are sitting there. Some churches, they're all wringing their hands, oh, we got to get Republicans voted in. Oh, for crying out loud. The issue isn't if they're Republican or Democrat. The issue isn't who's even sitting in there. This was written to people who were living under Nero. And he liked taking, he'd take you out if you were a Christian, dip you in some pitch, that's tar, highly flammable, strap you to a pole and light you on fire, just so he could see his plants at night. And these guys they were patriots, but they were loyal to what every government has in common. There's some Christians today who have this odd idea, even though they may not say it, that every time the national anthem is played at baseball game, Jesus stands up and puts his hand over his heart. I can assure you he doesn't. But he does honor the one thing this government has that even every communist, even Afghanistan has. They have one thing in common. At least one. And they all have it. And a son knows what it is. And it's called right there the ordinance of God. He knows what that is. I'm using that as an example to show you you've got this has been working. And so you've got that's forming that time in which you live and knowing the time. And you know from those components and how it all has made its way into your personal life. It matters in the personal details of your life. And more importantly, you've come to realize that the time has arrived for you to now move into a greater aspect of your Father's business that's going to naturally have you devoting more time to it. And so you need, just to go back to that once again, all I'm trying to do here is to point out the fact that you really do need to be suitably impressed with knowing the time as not merely an expression common to all men in general, but as a sonship. That's a sonship expression about time. I'm on sonship time now. So what we've got so far when it comes to dealing with these, maybe this will help kind of as we get ready to close things out a little bit here today. But really what we've got when it comes to this first of the two issues of time in our godly thinking, we have these two parts, part one and part two. Now I'm talking about just in our personal time. Why do I say there's two parts? I think I asked this. Why am I putting these up here as two parts just to the first aspect of time? Grammatically. Why? The colon. Yeah, pay attention in your King James Bible to all of those markers because that's what they are. You know, it's interesting today that there's hardly anybody. I bet you in the last 100 letters or emails you've ever written, you rarely use a semicolon. Sometimes you'll use that colon for various reasons, unless you're using the semicolon to do the winky smile guy. People do that to me from time to time. I have to, like, what do you mean? And I'm trying to see. But you've got markers in your English Bible to tell you how big of a pause you're to make. And the colon is the second most major pause in the English language. And so those oftentimes, not every time, sometimes they're used in a way to set you up for a list of things that's going to occur next, which gives you an indication that you're getting the mechanics of how something works. But by the common use of that colon in your Bible is stop. It's almost like a Selah back in the Psalms, to stop and pause and make sure everything there is working effectually before you move on to the next clause. And that's what you've got. You've got two major clauses in verse 11. And that knowing the time, that now it is high time to wake out of sleep, colon. Stop there, son, for a moment. Make sure that's made the suitable impact it's supposed to make. Then part two, for now is our salvation nearer than when we believed, period. And that tells you that, okay, I've got to now make sure that that's attached to the first thing because it's all one sentence, but it's two parts to that, or two major parts. And what I want you to see, though, is kind of to get more detailed, when it comes to part one, you've got, or that first clause, and that knowing the time, that now it is high time to wake out of sleep. If you looked at just that clause, and you were to say, how many steps are involved in that? Could you come up with it? Paying attention to the grammatical markings, what would you think? In that first clause, and that knowing the time, that now it is high time to wake out of sleep. Three. Because of the commas, right? You've got three little steps there. It has three steps to it, so to speak, that are indicated, and those are necessary to be there because they help you to gather the information and say, this is all important. Even two little words that seem to be totally unimportant. And that, comma. And that tells you that this body of information is immediately to be added to the previous information without delay. That's because you could easily get off into the toolies. You could wind up building homes or doing things or clothing people or going places. You could wind up doing all kinds of things for your neighbor. But a son, you've got to say, now wait a minute, I haven't dismissed you. You're still in the environment of your education and your vocational training. We've just gotten started, son. So this needs to now go with it. Before you go off and make judgments that way, put this with it because you've got to utilize your time wisely. And this is going to demand that you make some judgments about how to adjust your time. So those little words and that do that for you. While you do owe, and you're not being relieved of that, you do owe your neighbor an expression of godly love, which will require you to do some things toward your neighbor. There is a priority demand upon your time that makes it so you don't end up doing a whole bunch of things that impinge upon your time to get the rest of your sonship education and engage in the operations and further operations of your father's business. Those are the two little words, very powerful. And it's a step. Bloop, bloop, bloop. Three little steps. The second little step is knowing the time. And that tells you that you already know some things, that you're on sonship time. You're in this environment, so to speak, that you have positively and properly responded to being edified and educated and trained. If you didn't want this, you wouldn't be in class. People come here to this church, they get to know what the score is real quick. We're not here just to go jump all over the Bible, and we're here to study the Bible for study's sake. Most believers really don't know why they go to church. They just, well, it's Sunday. And the wife's going, so I'll drive her because I don't want her driving my truck. Or whatever. And even when you do get them there, and they are there because they're, well, I think, you know, my spiritual life means something. If you were to focus a little more attention, the pastor's teaching out of the Song of Solomon or something. Why? I'm not saying it's wrong to be in the Song of Solomon. But do you know why you should be there? Because there's a sense and sequence. The Song of Solomon, by the way, can't be properly understood without some things that went on before that. Well, we know why we're in the book of Romans. We're in sonship education. This is our very first fundamental foundational book for godly edifying. And so entertainment is not a priority here. So what I'm saying is you know the score. And knowing the time means that you've done that. You want this education. You want this training so that your life matters. It matters both now and when I face Jesus Christ at the judgment seat of Christ to be able to be useful to my Father in His business in the heavenly realm, which is a shock to most people. You know, most Christians think that when they die, they go to God's heaven, the third heaven where the abode of God is. That's where they're going to be forever. And there's fluffy white clouds up there, and they're just going to lay on clouds while angels drop figs into their mouths. And it's a shock to some Christians to find out that you're not going to be up there in that heaven for eternity. You're actually going to be functioning in the second heaven. And you're going to be working, laboring. God is a busy God. Busy, 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 busy. He's still busy. He has busyness. And he can't wait. It's kind of like this entire dispensation of grace is just a gigantic, I'm sorry, it's almost like this in the entirety from Genesis chapter 3 until the kingdom gets itself established. All of this is just a giant parenthesis until here he can get back to what he was doing here. But he's got a contention and a contender that he has to contend with. Satan, that adversary who took the possession of this earth, took the possession of the heavenly realm, and the contention is, who is going to be God Most High, possessor of heaven and earth? And out there it'll all be answered. But there's a whole... This chart, by the way, is just a fragment of God's chart. I feel like God would actually use this chart. It goes way on past this. The next dispensation isn't even on that chart. It's called the dispensation of the fullness of times. When God takes the heaven, he takes the earth, he brings them together to function as he ever intended for them to function in the first week of creation. That's a pretty heady thing to be involved in. But it's part of you knowing what time you're in. And the fact that as a son of my Father, he's going to let me be a part of the decision-making process of what he's going to do with his creation. That's offered to me. That's an amazing thing. So that means that knowing this unique environment of time of our lives as sons and daughters, the time has arrived in judgment here in Romans 13:11. It's arrived where therefore time has to be adjusted. Some adjustments to the priorities of our personal time have to be made, and that takes judgments on your part in order to fully engage and take advantage of the opportunities that you can be engaged in more and more in your Father's business. And the big part of it that's coming up, as you well know, is to engage the adversary. You're going to actually perform a gesture by casting off works of darkness that rascal has to respond to. That's how meaningful those works of darkness are to him. And if you're going to cast them off, you've now garnered his attention. But you knew that was going to take place. You're prepared for it, and you know how to handle it by now. But the truth is, there's an awareness regarding time that has to come to a son at this point, and you may not be able to properly frame it all up in your thinking without some help. That's part of what I'm here for, but that's especially what this information here is giving you. It's giving you the help to frame that in your thinking, so that when the godly thinking is there, you're knowing what time it is. You're able to see the steps involved, and you'll be able to come along and have that make the suitable impact it's supposed to make, so that your mind is renewed, and that coming out of this, your desire of your thinking is to do exactly what verse 13 says, to walk honestly as in the day, not in rioting and drunkenness, not in chambering and wantonness, so forth and so on. Put on that armor. You're going to desire that will come out of this. So, like I said, it may at first, what I've tried to work on, because I know it's hard to get that all framed in your mind, but by what Paul says here, is designed to bring to your mind that latent concept. And I've heard you say this, I've heard others say it, when you look at the whole overall thing and you see all that this is dealing with, take just a cursory look back at that table of contents of what all, you know, we're here and all this is yet ahead of us. Who in this church hasn't at some time come up to me, or I've heard you in some time, someplace say, I don't know if I've got enough time to get all the way out there. Good. That's supposed to have occurred to you. That's a good feeling right now to have. I could run out of time. Good. Most freshman college students and beginning calculus, that never occurs to them. They just want to get through the course any way they can. But to a son, he sits there and says, you know, it's quite possible. I could simply the issue of coming along, if not that, saying, I need to get a bit more time and get on the stick, so to speak. Because it's obvious to me now, there's so much out there, and that's what one of the things this does is it gets you to look ahead and see what's out there, see what's lying ahead. There's so much ahead and so much more that I need. So at least right now what I need to do is to ramp things up, to get into a higher gear. That's a colloquial way of saying it's high time to wake out of sleep. Shift gears. We're going to shift into a higher gear here. That's what your father's going to do. And now the concept needs to be properly framed, and the issue, it needs some godly guidance to it and direction to it, because the big issue here is that you've got to be able to make a judgment as a son. And that's why I'm not going to get into your personal life myself. You know your personal life. And we're not. I'm not hounding you and hounding you. I'm not preaching a series of sermons just to get you in Bible class. You're going to have to be, you're an adult, and you're going to have to make those decisions on your own. Some of you hit, some of you miss. I don't know. I hope you're catching up on the internet. That's what they're there for. But the truth of the matter is, these are matters, I'm not your tutor, I'm not your governor, I'm not going to puppy dog and follow you all around to see what you're doing or how you're prioritizing your life. If the living words, the living God can't do the job, I don't have a prayer. But what I'm after is, and we're not after huge segments right now, but we are after, there's going to be making a judgment and having to ponder it by nature means you're going to have to talk to your father more about it. That's going to up your time, your sonship prayer life. There's just going to be more to talk to your father about. And you're going to need to find time for that. And if it's 15, 20 minutes, I've erased that. As soon as I put a number out there, if I stood up here and said, if you can just get 10 more minutes, that's all you're going to, your tendency is, oh, okay, well, that's, I'm not telling you how much time. But what I'm saying is, if I could just a wand and erase that last little bit that I shouldn't have said anything like that. Because you have to make that judgment on your own. But a wise judgment is what we're after here in connection with the time that you perceive you need to increase investing in your sonship education. And a good education will do that. Your toughest years should be, the most focused attention upon your actual work should be the last year or two of your education. The first is just getting the general basics down. So you have to, I can remember at Vandercook too, at one of the things you did when you got through at Vandercook College of Music, you could proficiently play every single instrument there was in the band and in the orchestra. So you could play every single wind instrument, every percussion instrument, you could play every stringed instrument, and it was fun to watch the seniors take final proficiencies. And they literally would run from one classroom to the other. They'd go in and take a violin proficiency, and they were on a time schedule. Then they'd run and take an oboe proficiency, and run and take a clarinet proficiency, and run and take a trombone proficiency. And they were just boom, 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 in and out. It was hilarious watching those poor guys. And you thought, boy, you know, they got it tough. I thought I had it tough as a freshman, but I don't know. I'm not a senior and having to do all that. It gets tough. Things get a little, well, let's use this, maybe this is a little less off-putting expression. Things get a little thicker as the education moves on. Because your abilities are increasing. Your capacity is increasing. Your father can do more with you. And therefore you need to have some information that's going to enable you to consistently make wise judgments in connection with how you're going to best utilize the time you do have and to acquire more time to be able to make the necessary progress you need to make to be able to fulfill as much as you can the remainder of all that there is to your sonship education. And what we're told here in verse 11 actually takes that realization for just how much there is to learn and how much is involved in the remaining course of your sonship life And by what's said here, you're then to perceive, you're to think about, and some lights are to go on. And I'm not doing this for you, you're to do this. But as you examine your life and what you spend your time on, are you really making the best use of it? You're going to begin to see just what it is if you've got any kind of thoughts of, well, I'm not really up to speed here quite yet. You should be able to, by what's said here, perceive what might be holding you back. And that's where your adjustment's going to have to fall. Or what might be robbing you, and it really is. There's one thing I'm telling you that this adversary of ours knows, and he's gotten really, really good at. When God revealed the mystery through the Apostle Paul, it was a mystery to Satan himself. It threw him for a loop. He had to completely readjust his policy of evil. I mean, back here, he was defiling land and all this kind of business because the land of Israel was sanctified. There was a whole thing going on there. All of a sudden, now all those bets are off, and there's this new creature that he's going to realize that he's going to lose the heavenly places, the biggest realm that was his, and he's going to lose it first. Before the earth is even lost, he's going to lose the heavenly realm. And what many believers misunderstand is just how, to use a very polite expression, put out he is by that. The embarrassment and the rage that he has right now for you as a member of the church, the body of Christ, and as a son is beyond description. And he is extremely good at understanding the value of time and how to get you to waste it. You get these little machines, everybody's doing this and got the thumbs going and everything. I always laugh because people say, I got a cell phone, or I got a, what are those other things? I got an iPad. And that's good. Cell phones are good. They have good. By the way, I'm not saying give up your cell phone or your iPad. But oftentimes I wonder who's got who. You say you got it, or did it get you? Because the truth of the matter is, most people don't own those things. Those things own them. They manage, they dictate, they waste time. So, and I'm not trying to, don't go away with your head down. Oh, Mark really hammered me over my cell phone today. I wasn't trying to do that. That's your judgment. But that's the kind of godly judgments you're going to have to make at this point. They're personal judgments. Because this is all about your personal time. And you have very personal, individual situations and circumstances that make up your life. I recognize that. I don't know your life. I know it to a degree, but I don't know all of the pressures you're on. That's true, I don't. That's why these things have to be, that you don't have to justify yourself to me. These are things you need to talk and settle out between you and your Father, your Heavenly Father. But you have very personal situations and circumstances that demand you spend time in certain realms. Some of it is right and legitimate. In fact, if this works right, some of the biggest alterations aren't going to be so much as to what I'm physically doing through my day, but what your heart is given to during the time of your day. Because you're seeing more opportunities there in that day. But an evaluation, and it's never fun to make a, it's never fun to go to the doctor and get an examination. But an evaluation is supposed to take place, and some alterations and some reprioritizing is supposed to take place in order for you to get more time, the time that you need to get your training and education, that's all. Well, I guess the only thing I have left to say is, does that make sense? I mean, that's what we're dealing with now. in this first part of our personal time. Are there any questions or any comments before we leave along those lines? And that knowing the time. Oh, I don't know if I did this or not, but in fact, I'm not even sure what chart I'm on here. The third step is what we're going to look at beginning next time. That now it is high time to wake out of sleep. And you need to be able to appreciate that in the context in which it's said. But those are the three steps that are to get you to the position to frame in your mind properly what your personal time is and the demands that are upon it and make judgments according to that. Three little steps. You're going to see that what we're doing now is the fast part of all this. Because when we get to verse 13 or 12a, and we start dealing with dispensational time, I know this assembly, and I know that we still have a couple of holes that we're going to have to fill. Because there's some things sitting back in God's program with Israel that we just haven't got as good a grip on to be able to realize what's going to happen when this dispensation of grace ends and how that affects the way you view time. And that's why he says, now is our salvation nearer than when we believed. He doesn't say, now is our rapture nearer than when we believed. That word salvation is supposed to have a particular effect upon the way you think about this dispensation of grace in which we live and its ending. Well, anyway, any questions in that little verbal going on? Any comments, any questions? You feel confident about and that, how this is to attach, knowing the time? And part of my job as a pastor was to kind of get you to, whoa, for a minute, think about the environment you're in. You're in a unique environment. Sonship education and training is a unique environment. Not many are in it. But it does have time demands and priorities. So, all right, well, maybe you just need to think about it a while. But beginning on Wednesday night, we'll start examining the third step in this personal time issue. And next Sunday, we might just have a little special since we just got the one class in the morning. And then the I've got some new information on Easter that I might present to you that would be kind of fun for... Why does the word Easter occur one time in my Bible? We might have some fun with that next Sunday. Well, anyway, we'll stop right there for today and enjoy the rest of our day with our heads bowed.